Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Professor Is In podcast. I am Kel Weinhold. I am the productivity coach for the Professor Is In. Normally joining me is Dr. Karen Kelski, the founder of the Professor Is In, but she is a little bit under the weather today. And normally we would have rescheduled, being that we are the people who schedule. But we had the outstanding opportunity to have a guest today, and we didn't want to miss out on that. So, and besides, I think it's kind of better because Dr. Jane Jones and I are collaborators on one of our most exciting projects. So it's fitting that you and I should be the people talking to each other, don't you think?
It's like a reunion.
It is. It's like a reunion, especially since we don't get our at least annual New York restaurant visit, which has been extremely disappointing, I have to say.
I know. I haven't gotten an annual New York restaurant visit either, and I live in New York.
I know. Now we're back to the sad part.
I feel your pain.
I bet you do. I bet you do. So how are you making it in the pandemic?
You know, we're making it. I am here, as I said, I'm here in New York where the pandemic was awful. Mm-hmm. It's not the only place it was awful.
Right.
But we've done well of staying in our apartment and wearing our masks and trying to just avoid all people and things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've been up to. And right now, the extreme cold is helping us with our project of staying indoors. So,
that I noticed that you guys are just having nightmarish weather.
Yeah, we've had, oh my goodness, two major snows in the past couple of weeks and then more smaller snow. Mm. And I'm like, this is New York. We're not supposed to snow this much, but.
We're supposed to be cold.
We're in the city.
Yep.
So but we're getting the cold and the snow.
So we, in true, Jane and Kel style, had a conversation quite a few weeks ago about what the topic was going to be. And in true Kel style, I have no memory of what that was supposed to be. So what do you want to talk about today? So let me just tell all the listeners. I wanted to have Jane on the podcast because she was really the person that we were able to connect with who helped us, or we collaborated together in creating The Art of the Article. And we had a shared, I think I could say this, we had a shared irritation with the Academy and its failure to train people in the thing that's the most important thing for them to get tenure.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah. So we came up with this idea and it's out there and we love it. And I wanted to have Jane on the podcast because you are just one of the most clear-eyed thinkers I know about productivity. But we don't have to talk about that today, but I just want to tell people, you know, check out Up In Consulting, upinconsulting.com. But check it out and look at the work that Jane is doing, because if you need an editor and you can work on the thing she's working on right now, which is, as far as I know, books, but there could be more.
It's books.
Books.
It's all books. And Art of the Article.
And Art of the Article.
Books and articles.
Yeah. Books and articles, which is, you know, tenure. So.
It's like what we do is academics.
So let's talk. What's going on in your editor world?
Well, you know, what we had discussed a
I'm
few
so
weeks ago was talking about confidence.
Right.
Because I was, you know, and the reason I said that when we were talking was because I remember it. And the reason I remember it vividly is because I just had a conversation with a woman who's writing, and she had, you know, earned a contract and a publication contract and was telling me about it. And I don't feel that I'm calling out this particular person because I've had this conversation with tens of women, you know, and I was like, congratulations on your contract. That's so exciting. And the response was, it's not a big deal. I still have so much to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the response I get a lot when someone tells me, and not someone, a woman tells me, you know, I had this accomplishment, but, and I just, it's not a problem of women. It's a problem of patriarchy, of course, but this idea that you shouldn't, and how it relates to confidence, that you shouldn't take any pride or excitement in what you do and that you should be embarrassed when you talk about it, that it should always be a diminishing of what you achieve. Mm-hmm. And what you achieve is really hard. It's especially hard when you're a minoritized member of the Academy, when you are caretaking for many people, mm-hmm. including yourself, mm-hmm. when you're juggling a bazillion official number of service commitments.
Right.
And you're having these accomplishments. And I think that confidence has a role in it, because you're taught that displaying confidence is a mark against you, that you're arrogant, that you're, are we allowed to curse on this podcast?
Fuck yeah.
That you're a bitch, right. That you're full of yourself, that you're uppity.
Right.
And all of these things are incredibly problematic. And I think that that's one part of the confidence problem. And the other part, you know, which we talk about in Art of the Article, is that sometimes you do lack confidence because no one teaches you how to do things.
Right. Not because you're stupid, but because nobody's taught you.
Yeah. So it's like, you don't know how to do anything. Then when you actually, because no one taught you, then when you figure out how to do it, you're not allowed to be happy that you figured out how to do it.
Right.
You still have to just keep your head down. So it's like, you just can't be excited about anything you do at any time.
Well, that's really interesting. The way the universe likes to stack things up. I actually ended up by happenstance having a conversation about confidence with a group I was working with yesterday, because I said competence and one of the people listening heard me say confidence. So we ended up having a dual conversation where I was talking about one thing and she was talking about the other thing. But the thing that was amazing about it is that she put into the chat, because there was a whole group, the origin of the word confidence from the Latin, blah, 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 blah. Have fun, linguists, make, you know, notes about what I'm not getting here, but that it's based on the idea of trust. So it's the root of it is trust, which I thought was so fascinating, because that means it comes back to a sense of your trusting that you know what you're doing. Okay, that can be part of confidence, but also is that it's reflected to you that people trust your, I was thinking, there's no way that isn't a reflective thing too, right? That I get more confidence when I see people whom I respect or I hold as judge of me expressing trust in my thinking or my doing. Mm-hmm. That will also give me more confidence, which immediately speaks to the problem that you sort of already identified, which is when you sit as a marginalized member of the Academy, getting that reflection is few and far between sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Getting that supposed person who has authority or power over to decide whether you should be trusted in your analysis, there are more hoops to jump through. Mm-hmm. Right?
Exactly.
So I think that's, and then competence being this idea that you have, oh wow, I actually looked up the meaning of it, but it has this sense of sameness, like you've reached a level. When you've come to a level, that's when you're competent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just went into a linguistic digression, but if you listen to the podcast, you know that digressions are one of the key components of said podcast. So feel free to return us to the topic.
But no, I think that they do go hand in hand, competence and confidence. You know, you have to trust that you're capable.
So here's my question. As a coach, how do you coach your clients to develop confidence? What do you think are the things?
I mean, I think there are a couple of things, and it's hard. Yeah. So I think as much as we coach people to develop confidence, you always have to work on it, right? Like, it's not like, oh, I've been coached and now I'm confident.
If only.
Bye. You know, I'm confident now. See you later. That's definitely not how it works. And one place we start is just by looking for past evidence, because we all have it, of things we've done, of things we've accomplished, of things we've achieved. We've gotten into grad school. We've successfully defended dissertations. We've had articles published. We've done all of those things. And sometimes you just need to make a list of them with no but like, you're not allowed to put those on your list. I defended, but no, you defend it. And now you have a piece of paper that says doctor, or, you know, your name, PhD, whatever it says on it. You have an article, your name is on the article.
Right.
These things exist in the world, right? So there's evidence.
Mm-hmm.
There's evidence that I am capable of doing things and that I have done them.
Mm-hmm.
And then another part related to that is kind of, I love the word yet.
Right.
Because a lot of our confidence is like, I don't know this. I can't do this. It's like, well, you don't know it yet.
Right.
But what do you know?
Oh, that's an
to
amazing
get started.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know how to write a book, right? Because I don't know how to write an article. Okay, well, you know how to read abstracts, right? You know how to identify the parts of an article, right? You know how to seek out help, whether it's getting a book from the library or taking a course like The Art of the Article or joining a writing group. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how to do all of those things, right?
Right.
So then you're on your way. You know, you're on your way to learning how to write said article or a book. You know how to read literature. You know, like, there are things you know.
Right.
So let's take what we know and use that. And then I think, you know, one hesitation I have with asking to look for outside evidence, mm-hmm. like people reflecting it back to you, right. is that then you're relying on other people to validate you. And that can get really dangerous.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, of course, there are people we respect and people whose opinions matter a lot to us. And I'm not diminishing that. But there's also sometimes malicious and sometimes completely just oblivious people who are not going to mirror that back to you. And it's important to realize, like, you can't control what other people think about you.
Right.
Sometimes your actions have nothing to do with what they think about you. And if you want an example of that, look at getting an article back from peer reviewers and having three completely different opinions.
Absolutely.
They all read the same article.
Right. All read the same article. And, you know, this follows really nicely on the conversation that we've been having on the podcast the last couple of weeks about gatekeepers, about what's the difference between effective, like, constructive feedback versus people who are exerting power to punish you for not being what they want you to be. And that how critical it is to as much as the academy trains you every day, look to someone else's opinion of you. You know, this person has to approve of your research, your article, you're this, you're that. So you do have to get through hoops to not make the mistake of jumping over and having their opinion of your work be their opinion. You take it on as your opinion of yourself as a writer, as an academic. We're all going to not know stuff, and we just don't know it yet. So I think that's yet, man, that's a powerful word.
Yeah.
I need to incorporate it into my day all day long. I'm not out of bed yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's two things. It's realizing, like, yes, there are people who are gatekeepers who have power over you, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. And also, like you were saying, that doesn't mean that becomes your identity. If someone tells you, this article's trash, you know, blah, 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 whatever they're going to say, it's like, okay, you think that. And maybe there are some things that I need to change in this article and I could make it a different article. Okay. Like, that can all just be neutral. That doesn't mean that I have to decide that I am a bad writer, that I am stupid, you know, and I can also decide that I don't agree with that person.
Right. Yeah. I didn't do it that way because I didn't want to do it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that even Serena Williams loses a match occasionally, you know, but right. Are people like, oh, she should not be confident anymore in her abilities?
Right. She makes big mistakes and nobody says,
yeah,
well, you know what? You're no longer the greatest athlete ever. Now you're just,
yeah,
you know, come out and play with me on the playground. Yeah. Doesn't work that
way. Yeah, exactly. It's like, now you just get to go play tennis. Like, I don't know, at the hotel, like in the parking lot.
In the parking lot. You get to go to the local playground where they have a string as the net. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's such a great reminder. I think about, and you've heard me talk about this, and people who read the blog have heard me talk about how I work with clients, with coaching clients, doing a lot of research about working with elite athletes and how I think of academics as elite athletes. And if you look at elite athletes, number one, they train constantly and they train and they train to get better with the assumption that they will get better. They don't train thinking they're the best. They train to get to a next level, next level, next level. Mm-hmm. So there's the understanding of the work that has to go in there. They also don't do one thing, right? So it's not like I'm just going to sit down and pound on my computer all day long any more than Usain Bolt sprints for 6 hours a day. He does a multiple types of things to improve what he does, but he doesn't stop being Serena Williams, doesn't stop being Usain Bolt, doesn't stop being none of those people, stop being those things because they are backing up or trying different things or doing it in different ways. They're looking and strategizing, how can I get better about this? They don't lose their identity as a sprinter or a tennis player or anything else.
No.
And I think about that with coaching, you know, academics. How can we keep building different skills so you can get closer to what you want rather than, wow, you didn't come out of the gate sprinting an under 10 second 100 meter? Oh, well, then you'll never be a sprinter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do you bounce back? Like when something does go not the way you wanted it to. It's so funny. They were talking about elite athletes. Cause last week my newsletter was about NFL quarterbacks.
Oh yeah.
Like American football quarterbacks. Yeah. Cause I was like, this quarterback, you know, is an NFL quarterback. There are 32 starting quarterbacks, 32 of all the people who decide to play football. Right. And he has a throwing coach and you're like, that it is literally a job to throw and you still need a coach.
Exactly. Like,
well, of course he does, because he's an NFL player who wants to become even better.
Even better. Right.
But I think that, you know, the more for this conversation, like the more instructive position is actually like kicker, right? So the field goal kicker who they always bring out, you know, you have to kick the ball and get these points. And if you don't, it's most likely that your team, like you're getting a field goal because the team like couldn't get a touchdown, right?
They need you and they need you now.
So they need you now. And you can see a field goal kicker mess up, miss it. And within literal minutes, they have to get back on that field and do it again. Do you think that when they get back on that field and do it again, that they're thinking about when they messed up?
Not if they want to stay in the game.
They'll mess up again.
Yeah. Yeah, they will mess up again, right?
You know, so it's like you have minutes to get it out of your brain and be like, I can kick this. This one might be even further away. Well, it might be even windier, you know, and I just have to talk to myself and not get caught up in what tripped me up last time.
Well, and I think it also going back to that thing about when you get the feedback or you didn't get the result that you wanted, that there's something to learn in that failure. And I think one of the things that happens so often for the folks that I coach is there's that failure and there's the shame about the failure that makes them run the other direction from it. Instead of taking reviewer two's comments and saying, what of this is true? Rather than, well, that was just the most dickish thing anybody could say. That being like, yeah, that's your stuff, whatever. Is there something in here that's true? Because I think that the field goal kicker's perfect, right? You get up there, you kick the ball wide left. Your first job is to figure out why did it go wide left and how do I correct it? So there was wind. So there was this, oh, I planted my foot incorrectly. I need to correct that to have a better chance of success next time. So in addition to like clear your brain, it's learn from your mistakes, which weirdly makes you more confident. Right? Every time you learn from your mistake and try it out and it works, it builds your confidence. So in a strange way, counterintuitive way, mistakes make you more confident if you go back and try again.
Yeah. If you take the lesson.
Yeah. If you take the lesson. I think this all, the confidence thing and the sort of noting what you've done, like keeping a fact record is also a great tool for imposter syndrome, where I feel like confidence and imposter syndrome become, or lack of confidence and imposter syndrome become really tangled up together. Mm-hmm. That one of the keys to combating imposter syndrome is to recognize your successes And I often wonder how many academics are, every time they finish something, are stopping to say, I did that. I did that. I'm here because I did that. Like most people we're listening to didn't buy their PhDs. They actually did them.
No.
Right? They didn't buy their way into graduate school. They actually got in there. They passed their classes. So there's evidence that you can do. So, but we don't stop and recognize that because it's always one more thing, one more thing, one more thing.
One more thing. And it's, I mean, it's part of the toxic productivity that you can't stop. You can't stop and just bask, right? Like I did something great. Let me just sit here. Let me lean back, you know, and just be content that I finished something. It's like, no, I sent in that article and now I have to send in 5 more articles and I have to write a book proposal and I have to prep my courses. It's like, well, maybe after you hit send on your article, you can just be like, yeah, like that was awesome. I feel great.
What's my celebration, right? Yeah.
Yeah. What's my celebration?
Because the steps of creativity we know are ideation, conceptualization, production, and celebration. And if you skip celebration, which so many people do, and go right back to ideation, what fills in celebration is burnout because you never get a relief from the grind. And so how critical, I mean, it's again, celebration is critical for your confidence because celebration says I did a thing. I did it and I'm going to own it.
Yeah.
I also want to loop back to this like feeling like we're not supposed to celebrate that I don't think we can celebrate that feeling from misogyny. I don't think we can celebrate for women. Like celebrating is almost like a Pavlov's dog thing to those men who want to keep you down.
Like celebration, I cannot, pleasure, anything like that. They're right? Like,
oh no, we're not gonna. So I think sometimes we take those things on as individual. Like I don't, you know, I have a lot of trouble celebrating. I have a lot of trouble expressing my confidence. No, you learned to watch your ass. You learned how to go like hide your light because when you come up and shine, people come for you. And and so I just want to, like, if you're out there thinking, oh, I can't even, you know, I'm really uncomfortable celebrating. Of course you are. Like, of course you are. Mm-hmm. And if you can find your ways to do it, push the edges of that, it will improve your confidence. The more you celebrate what you did, you don't have to be one of those people on Facebook who's posting every time they got an article submitted, and, you know, but you can say, I did a thing to your people. And I think it's a good thing, a really good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that if you do want to post on Facebook, like, go ahead.
Go ahead. Right. Yeah, every once in a while I see these guys. It's always the guys. It's you don't have any responsibility. You don't have any anything. People handle like, I just had my 5th article accepted. And I think, could you just be quiet?
But no, yeah, no, bad egg.
that's who was in my mind when I thought you don't need to post that shit. But I do think like saying, and I think it's really hard right now because I think people are struggling. People hesitate to say, hey, I managed to push through. And so if you hesitate to say that publicly, if you have issues about that, don't forget to say it privately and to your people. Get a group text going. Get something going.
Get something going. And don't forget that, like, a lot of people are struggling.
Yeah.
And a lot of people want something to be happy about.
Yes.
Right? Like, your friends want to be happy for you.
Absolutely.
Just like you probably want to be happy for your friends. I always feel like, think of how you would be like, if your good friend, one of your closest friends texts you and is like, I finally submitted that article.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Would you be like, stop bragging?
Yeah. I would be like, let's tell everybody. Do you want to have a party?
Yeah. Yeah, you'd be like, that's amazing.
Because this is a freaking steep hill right now. So you need extra celebration. Yeah.
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 Exactly. And, you know, you don't have to go shouting from every mountaintop, but, you know, maybe you put your water in a champagne booth that night and you're like,
exactly.
We're celebrating.
Exactly. I'm ordering out tonight. Oh, wait, no, that's the, never mind. Yeah. I think that part of it, that part of recognizing what you've done. I mean, it's the way you started the whole conversation, recognizing that you did it is such a critical part of that building confidence to counter the negativity bias. Because what we notice is what we didn't do.
Exactly.
Right. We notice what we're weak at.
I didn't check off everything on my to-do list. Right. I said I would get this done by this day and I didn't.
Right.
It's like, but what did you do?
Right.
You know, because you did something. And even if what you did was take a nap because I was tired and depressed because we've been in a pandemic for a year.
Yeah. Right.
And I need to take care of my body. Right. That's an achievement.
That is an achievement. Resting right now, I feel like resting is the radical act. Like I am stepping out of this and I'm resting. And by the way, credit to the nap ministry for the whole, like articulating the radical process of rest has been really fascinating for me to read her work on, like, stop it already. She's amazing. So if you can find her, I know on Instagram is where I know her, but I think she's on
Twitter too.
Twitter as well. And I don't know her actual name. I just know the name of the account. So, but
I'm trying to think of her actual name and I can't think of it, but they have a 1-800 number you can call to get nap messages.
I think it's just, I mean, it's free. Every single day that I see it, she doesn't, her work does just a radical intervention on my, my own ideas about what I'm supposed to be doing. And to be clear, nap industry is really about radical work for Black people in particular. It's reclaiming rest. It's saying it, all of those things. And the entire idea of beginning to deconstruct our idea of what is successful and what is required and what we have to earn is just phenomenal as a cultural, larger world conversation.
Yes.
She's amazing.
I agree.
And every day I'm like,
I've been taking more naps.
More rest. What are you going to do today? I'm going to rest. I'm going to lie down. What's your contribution today?
And that's part of the creativity cycle too.
Right.
You know, is rest. You know, like you need rest. You need celebration. Like you need these things that take care of you that are nourishing. And when you're depleted, of course, you're not going to feel good about yourself. Right.
And you're not going to have those ideas aren't going to come to you. Right? Whoever had a great idea, like staring intently at the computer, like you have them when you're taking a shower or going for a walk or right. So that separation is also such a critical part of confidence.
Yes, for sure.
So I guess
I'm glad we're in agreement, Kyle.
We usually are. about work, we're generally in agreement. Relax. You can do this. We're both of the, I would say we're both of the, you can do this. Take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
Follow steps. Look to experts. One of the things I think about often is you and I talk, you and I have both written about why it's valuable to have a coach. And you know, I tend to get self-conscious about that. And you and Karen are always great coaches for me on that. Cause I'm like, well, it just sounds like we're self-promoting. And you're like, no, we're not. We actually do really, you know, valuable work. And mm-hmm. I think, so if you're listening to this and you're hearing us talk about the value of coaching, it's not self-promotion. It's reality. It's back to that 31 of 32 football quarterbacks. You're doing really elite work. You're doing difficult things that people haven't really necessarily taught you how to do. So on whatever level, whether it's, you know, working with individual coaches or finding those mentors who actually can show you how to do things and coach you, it's not a sign of a failure as an academic. I guess that's the thing I always notice is like, people think, well, I shouldn't have to ask for help. Why not?
Yeah, what I should have figured out already.
Yeah.
Why should you? Why should you have it figured out?
Right. Is there anybody?
Why should any of us have anything figured out? I mean, right. Why should any of us know anything?
And to be real, what have we ever done that we've ever just figured out? We've always had a guide. I mean, even if it was learning how to walk.
Yeah.
Somebody held your hand or you held onto the side of a table or you didn't. Every single thing we learned how to do, we learned in engagement with somebody who already knew how to do it and could guide us on. So anyway, countering
and that I agree with you. And, you know, coaching is so powerful, mm-hmm. you know, because it's someone, first of all, it's someone whose undivided attention is not helping you.
Right.
Which, when do we ever get that?
Right.
You know, someone whose undivided attention is there to help you figure out what you need to do.
Yeah.
In order to not necessarily be successful according to some external version of success, but to really tap into, like, what do you want? What is important to you? What are your values? And how do you align those with everything else going on with your life? And they're not always going to be in perfect alignment. That's not the point. But the point is to be able to really identify that, you know, and I think that sometimes when I speak to academics, especially, and I'm like, what do you want? It's a hard question to answer. Yes. Because you're so caught up in what the universe tells you, the universe, the university,
which you think is the universe,
you, right. which you think is the universe, is telling you, you have to do.
Right.
And there are things you have to do. And no one's denying that. I'm not saying that structural inequities and structural demands don't exist. But it's really important, if we're going to do any type of liberation work,
right,
to recognize that I have desires and I have needs and I'm entitled to things. I deserve things that are not what the university is telling me I need, or is not what the patriarchy, or is not what the white supremacist system is telling me that I should have. Like, we have to realize they're different. Like, that's the first step.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you do need a captive person to help you figure that out, because you've been, you know, like, I'm a sociologist by training, and we've been socialized to believe that, especially as women, we shouldn't talk about what we need. We shouldn't talk about what we need. We should just go give everyone else what they need.
Exactly. Exactly.
But our needs should always be subsumed to our kids, to our spouses, to our parents.
And I think the other valuable thing about, you know, about the work you do, and if people are not signed up for your newsletter, just go to upinconsulting.com and sign up for the newsletter, because you have such great content. And that what we do with the Professors Inn, one of the things that we all offer is perspective. We talk to so many people. We coach so many people. We interact with so many people. We mm-hmm. can remind you that you are not by yourself. And it can start to feel like you're the only one struggling, and we're here to tell you, you're not. And yeah. that so many of the things, if they were individual issues, we wouldn't see them over and over and over again. So they're clearly, in some ways, fed by the system. Maybe you're self-selecting a little bit coming into it, but they're fed by it. So having someone to give you a little bit of perspective is also really valuable. I think you get that upfront and personal, but you also get perspective. Which, you know, sort of switching back to the art of the article, I think that the one of the great values of that course is just that it, in each of the steps, there's a pull out 20,000, 30,000 foot view to say, this is how this works. Let me give you perspective on this, so you're not just down in the little hole of your article worrying about this is a way to look at this. And I think that having somebody to pull you back and say, wait, look broadly for a minute in both directions, mm-hmm. right? Look at yourself as something more than an academic, but also look broadly at the thing that you're doing, so you're not so in a little tiny box either way.
Yeah, for sure. And having that process, you know, laid out for you. Mm-hmm. So that you can do that aerial work, because it's hard to do on your own.
Yeah. And I'm gonna say, just for a little bit of, you know, whatever, all credit to you on the really those sections that, like, walking people in a really measured way through each of those. You know, I exist in that program just to be the gremlin wrangler. Is that what you used to call me? The gremlin
tamer, yeah.
Right. Gremlin tamer, right? I'm just there to, like, go calm down.
It's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
No, but I mean, I think that's important. And for people who don't know the way it plays out, it's like, it's a 10-week program that's stripped, and we take you through every step of writing an article. So How do you write an app? How do you pick a journal? How do you write an abstract? How do you write an introduction? You know, every part of an IMRAD format. So introduction, method, research, analysis, discussion. And Cal is saying that she's a gremlin tamer because her, what happens is that, of course, you go to start writing your article and you begin to ask yourself, who am I to cite these people? Who am I to submit to this journal? My methods don't, you know, my methods don't make sense, or whatever it is you're telling yourself. And you need to be kind of like pulled back in and told, what do you mean, who are you to submit to this journal? Like, you can submit.
You're an expert in what you do.
Conversation with these people, with whatever people you want to be in conversation with. It's fine. And that's really important because you can have a very well laid out step-by-step program, which is what you get. You know, to be confident that I gave you that. But if you don't believe you're capable of it.
Yes. If you look at it, it really is this whole conversation. I mean, we basically took this whole conversation and said, let's show you how to take the two components or the multiple components of building confidence in something. And that's doing it and checking your thinking and doing it and checking your thinking. So,
Yeah. And rinse and repeat for eternity.
don't discourage people.
I think it actually does encourage people though, because you know, you never want to get to the point where you're like, I should have it all figured out.
Right.
You don't get to that point with your thoughts either. You know, you could feel very, very confident and be like, yeah, I'm crushing it. Like I'm doing a good job. And then one day, whatever trips you up and you're like, I don't know.
Well, I read a quote.
I do this.
I read a quote by Maya Angelou today, Dr. Maya Angelou today, where she said, I've written 11 books and there's not, I mean, this is a paraphrase. I've written 11 books and there's not a time that I sit down that I don't think, oh, they're going to find out now that I've been running a game on them. I mean, that sense of like your confidence can ebb and flow, and the beginning of a project can be the very, you know, the deepest valley of confidence, even if you've done it over and over again. So I think that having that rinse and repeat is absolutely right. Well, we have managed to, as we do, go like about 10 minutes over the normal length, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So you have before we go though, you have, you know, and maybe you don't want to talk about this and we can cut this at the end if you want to, but I did see in your newsletter that you said you had big news coming soon. Is that something that you're ready to talk about yet?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. We actually announced it today.
Okay.
So I have a partner. So Princeton University Press has started a new initiative to create equity in publishing.
Okay.
And they're calling it Supporting Diverse Voices. And I am participating in a collaboration with them where they're opening up a book development proposal grant.
Okay.
So what happens is that they're reaching out to different minoritized members of the academy and inviting them to apply to get funding to write a book proposal and submit it to Princeton for a right of first refusal. And I'm one of the book coaches working on the program.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So the first wave of applications is for, it was announced today because today's Women in STEM Day.
Okay.
And it's for women, transgender, and gender expansive authors who are writing in science and math.
Okay.
To apply to the program. And if you get selected, you're able to work with one of us to write your book proposal. Fantastic. We'll give you coaching, editing, and then you submit.
That's fantastic. And I'm trying to think about like, what's that?
I can give you a link for the show notes.
Yeah, do give me a link for the show notes. And I'm also thinking about, I wonder if we can move this further up in the podcast, but I'll figure that out technology-wise.
They're going to have multiple waves. Yeah. So there's going to be a humanities and social science process in the late summer.
I am so glad that you like we got to chat, and I so miss coming to visit you, and like we need to figure out a way to sort of do little micro versions of this now and again, because I think I have all confidence that you and I have a tremendous amount to offer people who are trying to write, which we already believe, but I think we could keep figuring out how to do it.
Yeah, we just have to work on making it a little shorter.
Yes. Shorter, not 10 weeks, shorter, not an hour podcast. I'm really, you know, we keep getting hit up by all these different people about doing micro courses, and we're actually about to start a couple micro our own micro courses. So that's something to talk about.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Everything's mini these days. Micro.
Because people like have this much attention span.
Yeah. It's bad.
That's like all I have.
Time.
All right, friend.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Bye.